Now, those who follow the show will remember that back in March 2020, just before the whole COVID pandemic thing broke, or just as it was breaking, I had a regular guest on the show, David Icke, and we talked about many things. And one of the things that David Icke said that the COVID virus, the COVID-19 virus that was about to sweep the world, had its basis in Wuhan and was manufactured in a lab. He was using terms like gain of function, and he was talking about the October 2019 Military World Games, which had taken place in Wuhan. And those of us with an open mind found all that fascinating. The rest of the world, most of them, seemed to think that he was a complete nutcase, as they thought that many other people were a nutcase who even dared contradict the view that the virus had a natural origin. Well, we are now going to talk to somebody who didn't buy that argument either. And she is an award-winning journalist. She is investigations editor of The Australian and host of primetime show Shari on Sky News Australia. I'm delighted to welcome Shari Markson to the program. Morning, Shari.
Good morning. Great to be with you, Bill.
Yeah, and you. Thank you, Shari. Firstly, let's talk a bit about you. Sky News Australia, well, I was just talking to my colleague this morning about this. We're very familiar with Sky News here in Europe, in the UK particularly, but it's a very different setup in Sky News Australia. You're very much more forthright and more questioning, I think, there.
Well, we have news, straight news during the day, and then at night time there's commentators and opinion shows, and identities give their own view on the world and the situation. So I'm an investigations journalist with the newspaper here, the national broadsheet in Australia called The Australian, but I also have a weekly show on Sky News, and I was able to do a lot of interviews on camera over the past year and a half with various experts and scientists and government officials who are investigating the origins of COVID-19. And I did those interviews on air so I could, you know, bring to life and let people know that there were questions about the origins of the virus, and they could see for themselves that there were credible people who were not treating this as a conspiracy.
Absolutely. And I often say this, Shari, I'm not some kind of nutter, but I do like asking questions, and that kind of facility seems to have gone from our lives in the last couple of years. Anyone who dares to question a narrative that is placed by mainstream media and government is often regarded as somebody who's a bit of a nutcase and a conspiracy theorist. I'm far from that. But like you, you know, I like asking questions, and I also like to let our listeners, who I think are intelligent enough to make up their own minds, but they need the information to be put in front of them, Shari.
Exactly. I completely agree. And of course, I'm not a conspiracy theorist either. I'm the investigations editor at The Australian. However, like you, I think that we're falling into this quite worrying trend where we're told what we can and can't think. Everything has to be very politically correct. And if you even pursue as a journalist, even ask questions and start reporting on an area that's not kind of seen as a politically correct or fashionable view, like the origins of the virus, then you're ridiculed and dismissed. And it's so worrying because a lot of the information we were told early last year has turned out to be either false or misinformation. And so the very people and the institutions that were telling us various things, insisting that it was true, it wasn't true at all.
For you, what was the moment that first sort of set an alarm bell going in your head that thought, do you know what, I need to investigate this a little deeper?
Well, what happened was I sent a message to a very good contact of mine who's connected to the Australian intelligence agencies, and in March last year, and I said to him, is this idea that the virus might have leaked from a lab, I know it's officially a conspiracy, but is there anything there at all? And he replied and told me that the agencies were investigating whether this was a lab leak, whether this virus might have originated in a Wuhan lab. And so I started making more inquiries and investigating it. And by a month later, I had established through other sources as well to verify that information that the Five Eyes Intelligence Network was investigating whether this was a lab leak. I broke that story. It was a world exclusive. But for that straight news report, our public broadcaster here, the ABC, which is, I guess, your version of the BBC,
yeah.
They had a Media Watch segment. They used the word conspiracy 5 times. They really attacked me personally just for that straight news report that said the intelligence agencies were investigating this. We know now conclusively they were investigating this because of Joe Biden's probe. So that was bizarre to me. And then I just slowly, initially it was slow. I just kind of kept reporting on it. And then it picked up pace. The more I was digging into this topic, the more it started unraveling. And I realized there was scientific censorship going on, and there were all different aspects to this. And it was so great and it was so detailed. I couldn't simply report it in one newspaper story. And at that point, I knew I had to write a book, which had never been an ambition of mine before. But it was just such a detailed story with so many moving parts. It could only be told in a book.
Absolutely. And now you spoke to several whistleblowers in China. They must be incredibly brave people. How difficult was it to find those people and to then to convince them to talk on camera?
Yes. Well, so I spoke to some people who were off the record, and they provided me with information and documents on a confidential basis. And then there were other people who were prepared to go on the record and on camera as well, but on the record for the book and detail what they found out. One of them was China's most famous defector to the United States. His name is Wei Jingsheng.
Yes.
He was a former Communist Party insider. He spent 18 years in Chinese prisons before his defection to America. And he found out, I mean, like the person you interviewed, Wei Jingsheng told me he found out about the virus during the time of the military games in October 2019, months before any of us knew there was a problem. And he then set about trying to tell the US intelligence agencies about it. And he says on the record, on camera, that he was desperately trying to warn them and they weren't taking his warning seriously.
Goodness me. Now, am I correct in saying that you actually talked to Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo for this?
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
So as part of my investigation, I interviewed both of those people and many others. I interviewed everyone, pretty much everyone senior in the Trump administration, including the former director of national intelligence, John Ratcliffe. He oversaw the 18 intelligence agencies that comprise the intelligence community in the United States. I'm an objective journalist, yes. I don't support one side or the other. That's not my role here. My role is to investigate the origins of the virus. But I thought it was really important to interview Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo because they were saying from April 2020 that there was evidence for a lab leak, but then they never detailed what that intelligence was.
Right.
So I thought it was really important for me to interview them to find out what convinced them that this was a lab leak. And so I interviewed Mike Pompeo twice and I interviewed Donald Trump once on camera as well. And fascinating insights. Mike Pompeo's insights in the book are incredible as well. He says, for example, that there's so much that they divulge to me. But for example, in the book, Mike Pompeo says he thinks that the incident is probably September-ish, mm-hmm. but he also says it could have occurred earlier in the summer, in July, August. I mean, that's, like 5 or 6 months before China admitted there was an outbreak. So we're really looking at a situation where the cover-up could have been much greater than we realize.
Donald Trump said he made the sensational claim that body bags were dumped outside the Wuhan lab as the virus emerged, said some of the intelligence is classified, but common sense tells you it is most likely. And when I say most likely, like 95% came from the Wuhan lab. And Mike Pompeo said that the president gets the opportunity to talk about information the rest of them aren't privy to, implying there was intelligence that suggested bodies had been dumped outside the lab. Extraordinary statements from two incredibly powerful people at the time.
Yes. So I interviewed Donald Trump for a documentary that I made in conjunction with the book, a companion to the book. And And he said this, and we've never heard this before, that there were, I followed this topic closely, I've never, ever, ever heard before anyone say that bodies were dumped outside the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And he said that on camera. Mm-hmm. He also said that there was a scientist who became infected with the virus and then infected his girlfriend or his partner, and that's how it spread. He made it clear that this was, you know, not... It was difficult to verify. It was, and so he actually said to me, you know, knowing you, you can find, you'll be able to get to the bottom of it, or you can find out what happened. So, because that's the nature of intelligence, right? It might be human source intelligence, or you might have it from a single source and it's not verified. Particularly in China, it's really difficult to verify information. So a lot of the intelligence that the agencies are dealing with, they have assigned a low confidence assessment level to, because it's just so hard to verify. But if people do want to watch those comments from Trump, by the way, the documentary's on YouTube, so it's just called What Really Happened in Wuhan. Same as the book, same title as the book.
Fantastic. Now, let's get one of these terms out of the way, which is very important to this whole argument, and that is this gain of function. What is a gain of function experiment? It involves genetically modifying viruses to make them more transmissible, more virulent, or both, to help researchers test scientific theories, develop new technologies, and find treatments. And you found 60 scientific projects at the Wuhan lab that were funded by the National Institutes of Health in America over the past decade, and that some of those were for gain of function research. And director of the NIH, of course, is Dr. Anthony Fauci, a name which looms large in this story, doesn't he?
It does. The problem is, you know, the problem is that when you're dealing with this topic, so many of the players have become so political. They have support from one party or the other, and that ends up, you know, infecting the way the issue is dealt with. But looking at it objectively, I found some key pieces of evidence. One, as you say, that Fauci's NIH had funded 60 scientific projects at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Another is that He knew what was happening at the lab. He knew what type of research was going on there because they'd been funding it through a sub-grant. But yet, and you know the kind of access that I had, I've interviewed the most senior people in the White House, and they all said the same thing in separate interviews, including people who don't like Trump. They all said the same thing, that Fauci never, ever told them at the start of the pandemic that there was a laboratory right in the heart of Wuhan that had the world's largest collection of coronaviruses. Wow. Never said it. Wow. It was left to other people to suddenly find out, going, oh, well, there's this laboratory, like Miles Yu, Matt Pottinger. These are two other officials. They started looking into the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Fauci, who actually knew about this lab, he never sat there and told them about it. That's a big problem. If I can say a bit more on Fauci.
Sure.
He wrote a paper in 2012 that I found, where he warned that the risks of gain-of-function research, he said that the risks of gain-of-function research included starting a pandemic. He said this himself, but he said that the risks of a pandemic were worth the benefits of doing that type of research, and he was advocating for gain-of-function research, which was remains so hotly contested in the scientific community. And then I think the last really important point to add is he's admitted in an on-the-record television interview that I've included a snippet of in the documentary, he admits that he was funding this research in China to avoid an outbreak in Hoboken, New Jersey, or Fairfax, Virginia. So he says it's so risky that he didn't want to do it in America. He was doing it in China, which is plainly ridiculous, because outbreaks go global.
That would have been my first obvious question. Why would the Americans, with their huge resources, go to a laboratory in an unheard of place in the middle of China and fund experiments there?
Well, that reason that I just gave, that they thought it was too risky. But there was another reason as well, which is that it was banned in America.
Okay.
The Obama administration in 2014 banned or put a pause on gain-of-function research in 22 fields, including coronaviruses. So scientists were not allowed to do this research in the United States, and so they were funding it in China.
And it wasn't until 2017, amidst the chaos of the Trump administration, that Fauci lifted that ban on gain-of-function research, and it started again.
Now,
these are topics, by the way, I asked Trump and Pompeo and everyone else about as well.
Fabulous. Well, you can't go any higher up the chain than that in terms of the United States of America. Fauci had this whole thing not that long ago where emails had shown that he actually had been telling porcupines about this whole thing. He was publicly downplaying the notion of the virus being created in a lab. He even got a personal thank you for backing the natural origin theory from the head of a non-profit that used a $3.4 million government grant to fund research at this Chinese lab. So these emails that flew around that suddenly got released, it was almost like the Wizard of Oz, wasn't it really? You lifted the curtain up and there was Anthony Fauci underneath it.
Those emails were shocking. It was a big Freedom of Information request by BuzzFeed, and it showed that in the earliest days of the pandemic, while Fauci was publicly saying this was a natural virus, insisting it was a natural virus, behind the scenes, he was worried about the gain-of-function research that he might have funded in Wuhan. So they were really explosive emails. Extraordinarily, they were really only reported on by half of the media. The majority of the mainstream media and the left media in the United States didn't report on them. But the other really important point to make about this is, why is it up to the media, like BuzzFeed in this instance, who did this FOI? And by the way, their main story wasn't about this element of it. It was kind of a softer piece. But why was it up to BuzzFeed and other bits, media outlets and not-for-profit groups to do FOIs to get hold of this information, to get hold of scraps of information? And many of those emails are redacted. I mean, there should be an inquiry, right? Yeah. We need to know what research was happening there. If American agencies have information about that research because they were funding it, so of course they'd have the grant proposals, for example, and the research, the details of the research that was actually funded, well, there needs to be an inquiry of some sort, whether it's a congressional inquiry, a presidential commission. We need an international inquiry. It is disgraceful that it's up to media outlets to submit FOIs for just scraps of information.
And it's beyond belief to me that Anthony Fauci is still in his job. Would you agree with that?
Completely. Completely. And the problem is, it goes back to my point about this issue being politicized. The problem is that he's the hero. He's a hero of the left because he was so critical of Trump. So therefore, there's no accountability. Mm. It's incomprehensible that this is someone who supported gain-of-function research that some scientists have described to me as the father of gain-of-function research.
Yeah.
And yet he's the top medical advisor on the coronavirus to the president, even though he never said a word about the Wuhan lab. It doesn't make sense. And by the way, that's not even going into the fact that he objected to travel bans in the early days of the pandemic. And I detail those White House conversations in my book. I detail them very closely. Fauci was objecting to travel bans. And he also told everyone not to wear a mask.
Yes.
He was telling all of them in the White House not to wear a mask. So not only was, has he got this problem on the COVID, but his medical advice was no good either.
All along the way here, scientists, senior intelligence figures came across censorship in the early stages of the pandemic when they're trying to reveal these possible links of COVID to the Wuhan lab. You talked to lots of scientists, you talked to lots of senior intelligence figures, one quite close to home, Sir Richard Dearlove, former head of MI6, who spoke about his experience with the censorship of scientific journals refusing to publish papers that questioned the natural origin of COVID-19. I think that was quite an emotional conversation.
I think Sir Richard Dearlove is just brilliant. I have enormous respect for him. And it was, but when I first interviewed him, so I interviewed him for the book and the documentary. And when I first interviewed him for the book, I was writing this and investigating this when the rest of the world still thought this was a conspiracy. So it was before Joe Biden announced his probe, months before that. So, I hadn't really spoken to anyone else who had was connecting all the pieces the way I was. You know, the fact that scientists were being sent, scientists who questioned a natural origin, whose scientific research was pointing to the unusual features of the virus, that they were being blocked by scientific journals, that there was this Chinese disinformation campaign going on, or, you know, that the official narrative of the Chinese Communist Party was taking hold, and that there were these conflicted scientists. I mean, this is something we all understand now, but at the time when I was writing it, he was the first person I spoke to who was aware of what was going on, who understood what was going on. I mean, he's the former head of MI6, right?
Like, yes.
And so I got very emotional in that interview because he knew, he understood, he had seen the same things that I was uncovering as part of my investigation. And it was just such a relief for me to speak to someone else who completely got it, who saw what was going on and wasn't afraid to speak. And he gave such strong comments for the book on everything. And so we had this really wonderful long interview, and he was so generous with his time. He'd researched me with our intelligence agencies here in Australia before agreeing to the interview, which is kind of hilarious.
Absolutely. Well, it's been incredible to get you on. I mean, like your interview you just mentioned there, it's lovely to talk to somebody who's joined the dots as well. Because a lot of the public can only make decisions based on information, as I said at the start, that is placed in front of them. And I'm sure that some now listening to this interview will go, yeah, do you know what? Actually, what that they're saying there makes complete sense to me. I need to think about this slightly more. So I think the more of this that is out there, the better, Shari.
Well, I think that's what people have said to me after they've read the book. Like, even my closest friends who kind of know what I've been doing, it wasn't until they sat down and read the book and read all of the detail about, you know, the explanations given by the scientific journals for why they weren't publishing this, for example, and the detail of what the Chinese whistleblower said. It wasn't until they kind of read it all that they went, wow, this really has been, you know, a massive cover up. And they got, they're angry. You can't help but feel angry by this.
Absolutely. Well, the book is available from our website, tre.radio. It's called What Really Happened in Wuhan. And that documentary is on YouTube, right, Shari?
Yes, on YouTube, What Really Happened in Wuhan. And yeah, the book just online, wherever you are in Europe, you should be able to just get it online.
Fantastic.
On Amazon or wherever you buy your books.
You can get them from our very own website, in fact, to save them the trouble. So
Amazing. There
we are. Marvellous.
And
I'm delighted to hear that your documentary has survived on YouTube. Many haven't.
Yes. Well, yes, it's always a worrying prospect. But, you know, the documentary is factual.
Yeah,
it's facts. I ask questions. I interview people. So I would be very shocked if anyone could possibly accuse it of misinformation. But, you know, the tech giants were censoring this topic, right? Like,
yep.
It wasn't until May, only May this year, Facebook lifted its ban on discussions about a man-made virus or whether, you know, the virus was created in the lab. Just crazy, the sort of censorship as well from the tech giants.
Absolutely. Shari, a total pleasure to talk to you. Shari Markson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.